Testing 1, 2, 3, 4. Testing 1, 2, 3, 4.
That will come to order. The senators indicate their presence by voting.
The roll shows all senators present today.
Reverend John Patton of the Church of Christ will give the invocation.
Our loving God, although we may take life for granted at times, we recognize you as its source. We thank you. We ask for your continued guidance in the decisions we make. Varied interests press upon us individually and as a body. May we always be true to our consciences. Our desire is to serve the people of Alaska well. May this day's work continue to reflect that goal. I come to you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Please remain standing for Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Senator Hoffer.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent the Senate stand in recess for purposes of majority caucus.
Mr. President, there will be a minority caucus simultaneously.
The body will stand in recess. Call the body back to order. The Secretary will please certify the journal.
I wish to certify as to the correctness of the journals for the 103rd, 104th, and 105th legislative days and Senate Supplement Number 71.
Senator Halpin.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the journals and supplement as certified by the Senate Secretary be approved.
Hearing no objection, at this point I'm required to ask, are there any guests for introduction?
I don't see any.
Senator Sigler.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent we advance to unfinished business.
Without objection.
Mr. President, since I don't necessarily like the way the day is going, and I don't think it's going to get any better, and since I have an ophthalmologist appointment this afternoon early on, I would move and ask unanimous consent that I be excused from the Senate, not subject to a call, from and after 1:30 this afternoon for the balance of the day.
Hearing no objection. Back to guest for introduction.
It gives Senator Catula and myself a great deal of pleasure today to introduce to the body the mayor of Houston, Alaska, Bob LeMoyne.
Are there messages from the governor?
There are no messages from the governor today, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message of April 26, 1986, the House has passed the following and transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for House Bill Number 500, Finance, making appropriations for the operating and loan program expenses of state government and providing for an effective date. The Speaker appointed the following House members to a conference committee to consider CSHB 500 Fin and any Senate amendments. Representative Adams, Representative Duncan, Representative Rieger.
Finance.
That was the only message from the House today.
Are there any communications?
We have a number of reports, Alaska Land Use Council, Land Use Advisors Committee, Volume 2, April 22, 1986, regarding the Joint Special Committee on Local Option Laws, report to the legislature from John Binkley, Chairman of the Joint Special Committee on Local Option Laws, with a number of attachments to the report. This will be on file. This is also distributed to all senators. An annual report on the treatment alternatives to street crime task, Municipality of Anchorage, Department of Health and Human Services, January 1, '85 through December, and also received by Senator Curtula from Karen France a note of thanks on the memoriam that we sent for them, her husband. And that's the communications today, Mr. President.
Reports to standing committees.
The Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 13, making a special appropriation to the Office of the Governor for the Federal Budget Impact Fund, and recommends it be replaced with the committee's substitute finance. Senator Fakes, co-chairman, and Senators Hofford, Pawfisher, and Eliason signed the recommendation. Signing do pass were Senators Ferguson and Sackett. Senator Curtula signed do not pass. SB 13 has no further referral.
Rules.
The Finance Committee considers Senate Bill Number 405, loans under the Alaska Grain Reserve Program, recommends be replaced with the committee's substitute finance and attached to zero fiscal note. Senator Fakes, co-chairman, and Senators Curtula, Hofford, Eliason, and Ferguson signed do pass. SB 405 has no further referral.
Rules.
The Resources Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill Number 93, Finn amended, establishing a system of recreation rivers, recommends to be replaced with the Senate Committee Substitute Resources. Senator Strzelczewski, chairman, and Senators Fahrenkamp and Vic Fisher signed do pass. Signing no recommendation were Senators Coghill and Jara. CSHB 93 Finn M has a further referral to finance. Resources considered second sponsor substitute for Senate Bill Number 414 relating to general grant land entitlements. Senator and recommends be replaced with the committee substitute resources. Senator Strzelczewski, chairman, and Senators Hofford, Coghill, Fahrenkamp, and Vic Fisher signed do pass. Senator Jaroff signed no recommendation. Second SSSB 414 has a further referral to finance. The Finance Committee considered committee substitute for House Bill Number 161, finance amended, interest rate, loan conditions, and repayment provisions of scholarship loans, recommends it be replaced with a Senate committee substitute attached to fiscal note. Senator Fakes, co-chairman, and Senators Paul Fisher and Eliason signed no recommendation. Senator Ferguson and Senator Sackett signed do pass. Senator Curtula signed do not pass. CSHB 161, Finn M, has no further referral.
Rules.
That is the end of the standing committee reports.
Reports of special committees?
We have no special committee reports today.
New resolutions?
There are no new resolutions.
New bills for introduction?
There are no new bills.
This brings us to consideration of the daily calendar. Would the Secretary please read the first item of today's calendar?
Senate Bill Number 371 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor, an act amending the controlled substance schedules. The Health, Education, and Social Services Committee considered this bill and recommends do pass. Signed, Senator Fahrenkamp, chairman, concurring Senators DeVries and Josephson. The Judiciary Committee considered this bill and recommends do pass. Signed, Senator Rohde, chairman, concurring Senators Fakes, Kelly, Hofford, and Ziegler.
Are there amendments?
I have no amendments.
Senator Hofford.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 371 be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before us in third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
Senate Bill Number 371, an act amending the controlled substance schedules.
Senator Rohde?
Mr. President, this bill is largely technical in nature. It brings state law into conformity with the changes that were made in federal law. The federal government from time to time updates its controlled substance statute. This is a version which will bring our state law into precise conformity with the federal law.
Senator Fahrenkamp?
Mr. President, in reviewing this bill in committee, our main concern in HES committee was whether or not the drug schedule had been reviewed properly and according to our state statutes. We find that it has. It adds 26 drugs. These include designer drugs and does indeed put us in conformity.
You ready for the question? The question being, shall Senate Bill 371 pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? The Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? The Secretary will record the vote.
The roll shows 19 yeas, one absent.
And so, Senate Bill 371 has passed the Senate. The Secretary, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill number 468 by the Resources Committee, an act creating the Rail Belt Energy Fund and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee considered this bill. Senator Sturgiolski, Chairman, and Senators Coghill, Farron Camp, and Vic Fisher signed do pass. Senators Crawford, Eliason, and Jaroff signed no recommendation. The Finance Committee considered this bill. Recommends to be replaced with the committee substitute finance with the new title. Senator Fakes, co-chairman, and Senators Curtula, Hofford, Confisher, and Sackett signed do pass. Senator Eliason signed no recommendation. Senator Ferguson signed no recommendation. APA already has this authority. There is a CS.
Senator Fakes.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of the finance CS for Senate Bill 468 with the new title.
Hearing no objection, Finance Committee substitute is adopted with a new title.
There is an amendment number one by Senators Coghill and Fakes on page one, line 25, delete South Central, insert the railroad area.
Do we need to read the committee substitute?
I'm sorry, sir. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 468 Finance. An act creating the Rail Belt Energy Council and providing for an effective date. And now there is an amendment number one.
Senator Coghill.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the adoption of amendment number one.
Hearing no objection, amendment number one is adopted.
There are no other amendments.
Senator Alton. Senator Fisher.
Mr. President, I may propose an amendment. I have a question first, though. On page 2, line 17, in discussing the membership of the council, it says it consists of two members appointed by the governor, one of whom must represent an energy supplier. Mr. President, I note that there's further provision that there'll be seven representatives of rail belt utilities, which means that essentially we have one public, non-supplier public member. Could we have an explanation of that, please?
Senator Fakes?
We wanted to keep the Rail Belt Energy Council as small and workable as possible. The seven utilities wanted to be involved. They all have a special interest. It was one of the suppliers came to me and said, hey, there's no representation from a supplier out there. Is there going to be some mechanism to include that? The easiest way, the most efficient way, seemed to be to designate that for a governor appointee, whichever he decided.
Senator Kuhl.
Also leaves the option, of course, of the president and the speaker's appointments by other consumer groups, I believe, doesn't it?
Senator Victor Fisher.
Mr. President, I appreciate the last comment, but those have to be senators and members of the House. Mr. President, then I have a further question. What is an energy supplier? I misunderstood it. I thought it was somebody like a utility representative.
Senator Fakes?
Yeah, I'm thinking of somebody that supplies coal or somebody who has coal out there or the gas line or those other folks that are proposing those other mechanisms for supplying energy other than just hydro. So that's what I assumed it was. It was those particular folks that had a special interest in another source of energy besides hydro.
Mr. President.
Senator Joseph.
Thank you, Mr. President. Through the chair, I'd like to ask a question with a view to possible amendment. As I read Section 2, you have a very even-handed statement of what the Rail Belt Energy Council would study. But as I look at Section 1, it's almost as if we presuppose the results of that study in a couple of particulars. For example, proposed finding number 1 says the state energy policy should change from a policy of assuming responsibility for providing low-cost power to a policy of assisting the private sector to provide adequate power at reasonable cost. I would think that would be something we would want the advice of the council about. And then finding number 3, utilities should be encouraged to assume the responsibility of generating regional power rather than relying on the state. This seems to say that after other areas of the state get power generation from the state, now my area is going to do it another way. And I wonder what the thinking of the committee was in in making these particular findings, in light of the fact that I thought those were the very kinds of questions that the proposed council would address.
Senator Fakes?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This was a policy statement based on the fact that we're flat out of money. That when the original proposals were made for Rail Belt Energy, the state had billions and billions of dollars worth of funds, and we were hoping to build large hydroelectric projects on the Susitna River. Now we, if we're lucky, have $278 million, which is what was left, and if we are successful in passing a reappropriation bill of that power development fund money into a Rail Belt Energy Fund, we have at best $278 million and some change. That in itself, that money in itself, is not enough to build a project or a multiple of projects or a combination of projects to meet the energy needs of the rail belt. So it was felt that there's going to have to be some planning and some thinking and ways of leveraging that money and propose using that money to garner more money to solve those energy needs. And that's the only portion here, and the finding section is just meant to say maybe we've got to do something else besides relying on the state money. Maybe we have to look at ways that the private sector can do things, and maybe looking at ways to leverage the money that we no longer can rely on the state for these billions of dollars that the state no longer has.
Mr. President, I just have a question on page 2, line 20, when we're talking about the seven rail belt utilities. Is utilities expand beyond the electrical utilities there, because we have water utilities, garbage utilities, telephone utilities, or is this to reflect the electrical utilities? And maybe if so, we should clarify that.
These are meant to be the utilities directly involved in generating energy, power energy for the rail belt.
Senator Helfer?
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee substitute Senate Bill 468 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before the third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill number 468, Finance amended, an act creating the Rail Belt Energy Council and providing for an effective date.
Any discussion? You ready for the question? The question being, shall committee substitute for Senate Bill 468, Finance amended, with new title, pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary, lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, record the vote.
The roll shows 19 yeas, one absent.
Senator Harvard.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call and final passage of committee substitute for Senate Bill 468, Finance amended, be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Without objection, effective date clause is adopted, and so committee substitute for Senate Bill 468, Finance, with new title, has passed the Senate for the effective date clause. The Secretary, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill number 474 by the Labor and Commerce Committee. An act relating to exemptions from licensing requirements as electrical administrators and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee considered this bill and recommends due pass with an amendment and attached to zero fiscal note. Signed, Senator Jarrell, Chairman, concurring Senators Bennett and Ray. The amendment number one by Labor and Commerce is to page 2, line 13, insert the following after the word unit. If outside a building or a structure.
President, this would, I guess, be more technical because it was accepted in the committee and it wasn't put into the bill. I would move and ask unanimous consent that the amendment be adopted at this time.
Hearing no objection. Amendment's adopted.
There are no other amendments.
Senator Wright?
This has nothing to do with this. This has to do with the previous bill. Did we change the title on that?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
There's no further amendments, Madam Secretary.
There are no other amendments.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent. Senate Bill 474 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed in final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before us in third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
Senate Bill number 474 amended an act relating to exemptions from licensing requirements as electrical administrators and providing for an effective date.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall Senate Bill 474 amended pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? The secretary will record the vote.
The roll shows 19 yeas, one absent.
Senator Alford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent to the roll call and final passage of Senate Bill 474 amended be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted. So Senate Bill 474 amended and passed the Senate for the effective date clause. Will the Secretary please read the next item on today's calendar?
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 391, State Affairs, an act relating to the ethical conduct of governmental activities and providing for an effective date, held with Amendment number 1 moved and pending.
Mr. President.
Senator Cargill.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that my amendment number 1 be withdrawn.
Hearing no objection, amendment number 1 is withdrawn.
There is an amendment number 2 by Senator Coghill, beginning page 21, line 7.
Has that been distributed?
President. Yes, Mr. President. I think that, Mr. President, that the amendment number 2, do we read the whole, all of the amendments? Or do we take them? They all kind of are germane, so they should all read together.
Secretary, I'll read the amendment.
On page 21, line 7, delete the words the Alaska Railroad. On line 8, add, comma, but excluding the Alaska Railroad Corporation. Then on page 26, line 3, delete, comma, except Alaska Statute 3952. And on line 4, add. However, the corporation shall adopt a code of ethics for its employees, which is substantially equivalent to that adopted in AS 39.
Mr. President, I move the adoption of the amendment. I see that we have an amendment to the amendment by Senator Jolson. I have no problem with that amendment. The thing is, what I'm trying to do here is to keep a separate but equal situation with the railroad corporation and. So I move the amendment.
Jeff, unanimous consent?
Parliamentary inquiry. What is the pleasure of the chair, to act on the amendment to the amendment first or to adopt the Coghill amendment?
Let's adopt the amendment to the amendment.
I would move the amendment to the amendment as unanimous consent.
Hearing no objection, the amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we have amendment number 2 before us. Senator Victor Fisher?
President, before the amendment is adopted, I'd suggest a technical amendment on the next to last line, change which to that, so it reads, for its directors and employees, that is substantially equivalent to that adopted.
No objection to the technical amendment? Senator Ray?
If this is the way the body apparently is going to go, shouldn't we put a time certain in there? I mean, you're just leaving it open. Sometime they should adopt it. You aren't saying anything other than they shall adopt a code of ethics. What does that mean? Today, tomorrow, 1995, 2001.
Senator Cogger.
Mr. President, I have no quarrel with that, but I would submit to the body that the Railroad Corporation would have to substantially comply with this. With this statute by the effective date of this act.
Senator Cotullo?
I don't think there's that directive unless it's stated in the law or at least by legislative intent.
Senator Kelly?
Mr. President, could we move this bill down to the bottom of the calendar and draft that language and continue to move forward?
Hearing no objection. SB 391 be moved to the bottom of today's calendar.
Senate Bill number 424.
Secretary, please read the next item on today's calendar.
Senate Bill number 424 by Senator Sackett, an act relating to studded tires or chains on rented motor vehicles, has been held. It does have a Transportation Committee substitute, which has not been moved.
Mr. President.
Senator Helton.
I move and ask unanimous consent that Senate Bill 424 be returned to the Transportation Committee at the request of the sponsor.
Without objection, Senate Bill 424 be returned to the Transportation Committee.
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 38 by the Transportation Committee relating to the centennial of the automobile. The Transportation Committee considered this resolution and recommends to pass. Signed, Senator Coghill, Chairman, concurring Senators Abood and Josephson.
Any amendments?
There are no amendments.
Senate Concurrent Resolution number 38 is now before us for final passage. Is there any discussion? You ready for the question? The question being, shall Senate Concurrent Resolution number 38 pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? The secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? The secretary will record the vote.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
And so Senate Concurrent Resolution number 38 has passed the Senate.
We have an adies for
adies. Call the body back to order.
There is an amendment number 3 by Senator Coghill. This amendment is an amendment to amendment number 2. It's inserted into amendment number 2. After the word, however, insert. No later than January 1987.
Senator Coghill.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent for the amendment to the amendment.
Hearing no objection, amendment to the amendment. Amendment number 3 is adopted.
Yes. You ought to give a specific date in January. That's kind of ambiguous, like January 31st, January 1st, 15th, whatever.
January 1st.
Okay, sure.
Actually, Mr. President, if you look on Section 7 of the bill on page 26, why everybody else has to comply by January 1 of 86 or 87. So this conforms with it.
January 1. Thank you. Without objection, amendment number 3 is adopted.
Objection.
Senator Booth.
Thank you, Mr. President. I object to the amendment itself, and I believe that's what we're on. I believe the railroad should be left in the bill as it is. This deletes it. And I'd like to speak to Senator Coghill's concern for SB 391 or this amendment. As you're aware, the bill went through a very detailed review in the State Senate's, the Senate State Affairs Committee over a period of 2 weeks. During that section-by-section review, we never heard from the railroad objecting to its inclusion in the bill, and the committee itself did not find inclusion of the railroad to be a problem. Again, the railroad did not appear before the state finance to or the state committee to object to its conclusion under the bill, and no member of that committee objected, and that was in finance. I believe the purpose of the public hearings is to receive testimony concerning various provisions of a bill, and that waiting until a bill is before the entire Senate before first raising an objection makes reasonable consideration of a matter difficult. However, I do wish to assure the senator from Nenana, I want to reassure him about this bill. First, nothing in the bill in any way prohibits the railroad from handling employees' disputes and discipline as it sees fit. The bill has a section which makes it clear that the railroad can proceed with any employment action regardless of the actions of the Attorney General or the Personnel Board in reviewing an employee's actions under the Code of Ethics. The best way to view it is to think of the actions taken by the railroad and the actions taken under the ethics bill as parallel events which do not depend on each other in any way. Now, that's what the last part of the amendment did. It said they will adopt substantially the same code of ethics. but it deletes him from the bill. Second, this bill addresses unethical conduct, not general personnel matters, which will always remain the responsibility of the railroad. This bill places in statute clear standards guiding the ethical conduct of all executive branch employees. It doesn't delve into the hundreds of other matters having to do with the working conditions that each state agency, including the railroad, currently handle on a day-to-day basis. This bill presents standards of conduct that one would hope any employee of the department, office, or board, or corporation within the executive branch, whether public or quasi-public, would feel comfortable working in under. The standards are fair. If one were to start excluding state agencies or corporations, then it is very hard to figure out where one should draw the line between those the legislature believes should be subject to this code of ethics and those we believe should not be covered by the code. The railroad has recently been excluded from a number of major pieces of the legislation, including the procurement code. There were a number of valid reasons for the exemption in that particular case, but the same reasons raised there are not applicable in this instance. I recognize that the railroad is a unique instrument and that we must often separately consider the impact of legislation on the railroad. However, in this case, I believe asking the employees of the railroad to be covered by the same standards of conduct affecting everyone else in the executive branch is not only fair, it's proper. The public has a right to know that the same standards apply to all, not just some. I urge you to defeat the amendment and pass the bill as it's originally written. Thank you, Mr. President.
Mr. President.
Senator Coggle.
Mr. President, I think that the good senator from Spinard has made a good case for the amendment in the fact that the amendment only does two things. It sets up a time element that the railroad corporation must put together a code of ethics for a separate entity of the state. We've asked them to be a profit-making institution, but we're also asking them to guide themselves under the same standards that the rest of the state of Alaska and the public employees have to do. And I think that it's a good way to go. We've exempted the Alaska Railroad from a lot of the other items that we require the executive agency to go through, and it's not a part of the executive agency, it's separate and apart, and I would urge the senators to vote for the amendment.
Senator Victor Fisher.
Mr. President, I rise to agree with Senator Abood with respect to this amendment. First of all, just because the Alaska Railroad is supposed to make a profit doesn't mean that it should not abide by the same standards and the same procedures as are applicable to other officers and employees of the state. Principally, however, I'd like to make the point that the amendment proposed by a senator from Nenana does not deal with the problems and the goals raised by a senator from Spinard. Basically, there is a procedure established in the bill that when the governor, for example, is accused or if there's some specific problem pertaining to the governor or some other top or the attorney general, there's provision for calling in outside counsel for other types of procedures than are applicable to other officers. In this case, if the Alaska Railroad were to use its own counsel to deal with possible infractions or problems related to the directors, to the manager, to the assistant manager, and other officers of the railroad, you would have a very cumbersome machinery that have to be established to obtain outside counsel. My basic point, Mr. President, is that a process, a procedure is established under the bill. The railroad can fit in very simply, very easily, and assure and inclusion of a railroad would assure that exactly the same principles and procedures will apply to railroad as to everybody else in state government.
The question being, shall amendment number 3 be adopted? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary will lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary will record the vote.
The roll shows 11 yeas, 9 nays.
And so amendment number 3 has been adopted. Are there any further amendments?
There are no other amendments.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask the unanimous consent that the committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 391, the State Affairs Amendment, be considered engrossed, advance to third reading, and place for final passage.
Hearing no objection, the bill is now before us in third reading. Will the Secretary please read the bill?
Committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill number 391, State Affairs Amended, an act relating to the ethical conduct of governmental activities and providing for an effective date.
Is there any discussion? Senator Wright?
This is a tough situation. I went all through the discussions in the State Affairs Committee, which did the majority of the work on the bill, and then of course, this last amendment that we made it makes it an onerous situation for me in that I don't think that the people in Alaska Railroad should be treated any differently than anybody else in the state. And this argument, I think, is specious about, oh, they're supposed to be a profit-making organization somewhere down the line. Well, they can be a profit-making organization, but I don't want the people working there making a profit to themselves either. I want them to be just as ethical as everybody else in the state. I was going to have a meeting with my colleague from NANA, but then I was afraid to because of the secret meeting rule, and I didn't think we were going to have a little talk with him on it, but I was afraid to because I was afraid I might be prosecuted or charged with it somewhere down the line. I guess what I'm trying to say is that these are one of the situations where you're in between a rock and a hard spot because you agree with the context of the majority of the bill, but the amendment makes it onerous and it casts a doubt on somewhere down the line in some future time. Somebody's going to say, well, now you let these people in the railroad, you see, and they had this a bunch of Gandhi dancers down there, and they were selling all this equipment, and you're the fault because you wouldn't let them come under the ethical conduct bill. And so I guess what it comes down to, I suppose I'm going to have to vote for the bill, although, I wish the senator from NANA would have just left it alone and just let it hang by itself and let everybody be as guilty as the next guy or as ethical as the next guy.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 391, State Affairs Amended, pass the Senate? Senators may proceed to vote. Does any senator fail to vote? Secretary, lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote?
I'd like to change my vote from nay to yea.
Any objection? Secretary, record the vote.
The roll shows 20 yeas.
Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask the unanimous consent of roll call and final passage of committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 391, State Affairs Amended Senate, because of the roll call and effective date clauses.
Without objection, the effective date clauses are adopted. So committee substitute for sponsor substitute for Senate Bill 391, State Affairs Amended, and passed the Senate with the effective date clauses. Brings us to the citation calendar.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the publication of the notice requirements be suspended and the citation honoring the St. George Island Bicentennial be taken up as a special order of business at this time.
Without objection, so ordered. Secretary, please read the citation.
A citation honoring St. George Island Bicentennial by Representative Herman and Senators Jaroff and Vic Fisher.
President, I move and ask unanimous consent the citation be adopted.
Hearing no objection, the citation has been adopted. Brings us to the end of the day's calendar. Is any unfinished business? Senator Kelly?
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the 5-day notice of the publication requirement on Rule 23 of the Uniform Rules be waived with regard to Senate Concurrent Resolution 43.
Hearing no objection? Have an objection?
Mr. President, Senate concurrent resolution 43 suspends the rule that would allow us to make the title change to include the teacher's retirement system in the early retirement bill.
Objections removed. Hearing no objection. Senator Brody.
I'd move and ask unanimous consent that the five-day rule be waived on House Bill 237 to allow that bill to be heard on Thursday in the Judiciary Committee. This makes certain changes in the state employees' pension and specifically the spousal benefits to that pension.
Objection.
Mr. President, I'm as the prime sponsor of Senate Bill 409, which 405, which is the grain reserve. I move and ask unanimous consent that Senator Curtula be shown as a sponsor also.
Hearing no objection.
Mr. President, I would
heard no objection. Senator Eliason.
Give notice of reconsideration of my vote on Senate Bill 474.
So noted. Senator Sturtevant.
Yes, Mr. President, move and ask unanimous consent that committee substitute for House Bill 477, Finance, repealing and dealing with energy programs, be waived.
Hearing no objection. Announcement of committee meetings. Senator Kelly.
Mr. President, there will be a Rules Committee meeting at 1:20 today to hear a public hearing on SCR 43 and for the purpose of calendaring bill.
Good. Senator Fakes.
Thank you, Mr. President. The Finance Committee will continue work tomorrow morning at 8:30. All the bills are posted. We will begin with the tort reform bill and then move to Senate Bill 408, which is an act relating to state aid for education, and we'll get as far as we can tomorrow on our postings.
Senator Cargo.
There will be no Senate Transportation Committee meeting today. We finished our item that we had calendar for today on Friday, so our next meeting will be Wednesday, April the 30th, 3:30 in the Butrovich Room. We will have House Concurrent Resolution 36, Interstate Airline Industry Study, and Senate Bill 416, Limiting Warranties for Used Vehicles.
Yes, Senate Resources today, 1:30, Butrovich Room, large agenda, SJR 51, endorsing support of timber industry, HB 440, Recreation Management Plan, implementing the Bristol Bay Area Plan, HJR 65, foreign marketing of pink salmon products, SJR 50, incidental catch of high-value fish stocks, HB 407, reports and records concerning game animals, and HB 635, establishing the Willow Creek State Rec Area.
Senator Roth.
Mr. President, the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will have a joint meeting today with the House Labor and Commerce Committee. It'll be held over in room 603 in the court building, and it'll be the conduction of the sunset hearing, review hearings for the Board of Electrical Examiners and the Board of Veterinary Examiners. And on Friday, I would like to announce to the body that the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee will meet in the Belts Room, and we'll have before us a committee substitute for House Bill 63, which is an act relating to the Pullman Code, House Bill committee substitute for House Bill 305, an act relating to barbers, cosmetologists, estheticians, and provides for an effective date, committee substitute for House Bill 430, an act relating to audiologists, hearing aid dealers, and dispensing of hearing aids, and committee substitute for House Bill 517, an act relating to private sale and consignment of works of art.
Senator Cargill?
Could we revert back to unfinished business, please?
Hearing no objection. Revert to.
Oh, sorry then.
Restate
Senator.
Your motion. Thank you.
Revert to.
Without objection, you have the floor.
Mr. President, we have one of our pages leaving today. He's going up to Northway to go back to work on construction, and this is his last day, and he's at the back of the gallery. I think the Senate would like to appreciate his business that he's had with us throughout the year. Kelly Groudon will be going back, and he'll be going on as a teamster at the construction at Northway. Thank you, Kelly.
Senator Boone.
President, Are we at special orders yet?
We are now. We're at special orders.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent. I be given the privilege of the floor to speak on the control of reality and how we can prevent the end of our financial security.
Without objection, Senator, you have the floor.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to come off the top of my head, but I wanted to impress you with my true feelings on this. Of course, the last time I did this and I read something, I got shot down. However, I'm going to try it another time. So forgive me if I read my speech that I composed over the weekend. We in the legislature control, but to a small degree. You, the public, not in the legislature control, in the form of organizations like the League of Women Voters, the Freak Committee, the... You are the controllers. It seems to me that our main problem today is the aforementioned controllers are not taking seriously the predicament where we are in and viewing the situation through rose-colored glasses. And why? Because of the information coming from so-called experts that we have over $1 billion in one-time monies that came from places like the rainy day account, successful lawsuits, oil company suits that we won, TAPS, multifamily housing loan funds, and others, to the tune of a couple of $1 million or $1 million or $1 billion. Now, that is true, but how we use this bonanza is the secret and the reality of our future. In some areas of suggestion solutions, 70 to 100% of these funds would be used to beef up our expenditures until the price of oil goes up, which in itself is a good idea if you're absolutely sure of this. Today's prices showed a big difference in that. But with the international situation as volatile as it is and the definite split in the OPEC nations, indications are they will not go up to the same level for quite some time, and certainly not at the rate they came down. Thus, consider from 2 to 4 years. To ensure our financial situation, the controllers again must understand the seriousness of today's problems. We do have a very substantial cut in our income. And if we don't know how serious the cuts can be, because of the changing prices not up, but down, and we don't know when that downward slide will stop or how long it will stay stable once it does stop, to say nothing of it going up, then why can't the controllers, writing POMs and sending letters, tell us to reduce government spending, not pull it out of potential savings just to keep it going? Why aren't the controllers, being the people, saying, okay, we'll tighten our belts, bite the bullet, and all those good things, instead of saying, cut other programs, but don't cut mine? We won't survive. The bottom line is, the administration and the House will not cut the budget to a manageable level because, one, it is an election year and courage is replaced with votes. Two, since the years of big oil and big money, we have bathed in the lap of luxury and have done things we never would have done if that money never came, and many we shouldn't have done. So we're spoiled. We are calculating our revenue loss on about $13 to $16 for a barrel of oil, when in fact, the number today is $11.50 to $12 and going down. This is not facing reality. Four, we must spread our losses over a 3 or 4 year period and use our one-time monies, which I mentioned before, to ease the letdown to our citizens over these next 3 or 4 years. These are hard decisions, and those who do not heed the warning signs we'll spend the money to keep the controllers happy. But when that happens, here are some of the alternatives in the next 3 or 4 years for the controllers because of the disregard of today's reality. One, we go and we wipe out the dividends. That itself is not too bad an idea. B, use the undistributed income. Even that isn't too worth shaking. Eliminate the loan programs. Get into the permanent fund. Use a chainsaw on programs instead of a broad axis so many controllers talk about doing. Initiate a new and severe state income tax. And if you think that 8 or 9% is tough, as New York has, think again. To support the controllers in the manner in which they've been accustomed, that percentage will make New York's tax small in comparison. And if the controllers keep dancing and fiddling, then think back to the fairy tale of the grasshopper and the squirrel. The squirrel locked up stocked up on food for the winter, and the grasshopper fiddled and played, and who went hungry? Mr. President, I call it reality, and we can prevent the end of our financial security by facing it head on and prudently solving the problem with strength and determination, by reducing our expenditures, using our one-time monies to gradually ease the downward tide and protect our savings for a very unknown future. But then again, we are so much better off than most states. I'd like to see us keep it that way until this crunch that we have eliminates itself. This was not going to stay forever, but it's going to stay with us enough time that we better get over the hump and still have monies left. Mr. President, thank you for allowing me to speak.
Senator Fakes.
I move and ask unanimous consent for the privilege of the floor to speak on the price of oil.
No objection. You have the floor, Senator.
Mr. President, it became knowledgeable to the co-chairman of finance this morning that Standard Oil of Ohio, as of May 1st, will be posting ANS at $11.50 on the West Coast, $12.50 on the Gulf Coast. That represents an additional $1.50 decrease on the price of ANS. These are contract prices. This is for real. It's not the spot market and it's not the futures market. That amounts to approximately $225 million additional decreases, projected income for the 87 budget, approximately between $30 and $40 million additional negatives on the 87 or FY87 numbers. It means that the price of oil is still going down. This will be what the state of Alaska is receiving for its oil starting on May 1st of this year. This decision was made in Cleveland this morning.
Senator Sturgis?
Yes, move and ask unanimous consent to speak to the same topic as raised by my colleagues.
No objection. You have the floor, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's very obvious that we're engaged in the most difficult and challenging task to face this body since I've been in the legislature, and I'm in my eighth year. We have to cut the budget far more than ever before. The decisions that we make are going to affect every Alaskan. I think that there are a lot of Alaskans out there that are frustrated and angry because they believe they have not been a part of that budget process. Today or tomorrow, it's my understanding that some of our citizens are going to be filing a lawsuit aimed at making sure that the public voice is heard. I'm committed to that principle for which they're fighting. Upon request of the plaintiff's attorney, I backed up that commitment by executing an affidavit in support of the efforts to see that the public's business is conducted publicly. The issue is open government, and I stand first, last, and always for that. The lawsuit's going to question the propriety and the legality of budget decisions considered in closed caucuses, in closed finance committee meetings. Our Supreme Court has ruled that the legislation enacted in violation of the open meetings law is void and must be reenacted in compliance with that law. The cost and disruption to the state's business could be enormous, and we obviously need to consider potential impacts of the suit. I think that we can act now to eliminate any possibility that what we've done may be in violation of the law. We can act now to bring the people into the process. Tomorrow, or today, we referred the House budget to the Senate Finance Committee. The Senate Finance Committee can, and I believe will, conduct public hearings as part of its consideration of the House bill. This is the time right now to be sure we're acting in the best interest of all Alaskans, and obviously that bill comes to the Senate, the full Senate, for its consideration. Certain programs I see are essential to Alaska's future. First, the area of economic development. I think that we have to spend money to help private industry diversify our state's economy. This is not the time to be cutting funds that promote tourism, for example. We cannot cut adult basic education programs that help Alaskans qualify and compete for jobs. Second is the issue I'm talking about this morning, the public's right to know what we're doing and its right to participate. Crippling the Public Offices Commission and abolishing the Office of the Ombudsman will further isolate the people from their government and jeopardize their ability to hold their elected representatives accountable. Third, the strength of our communities. Millions of dollars have been spent, and I've participated in those votes, for schools and community buildings. It doesn't make sense to eliminate programs that maximize the use of these facilities by the people. Community schools, the Arts Council, both help make communities out of people. In this category, I also include the public broadcasting system, which is of particular importance to rural Alaskans. Proposed cuts are so deep that the system cannot get, as I understand, maximum federal matching funds. Finally, programs for Alaskans who need help, the Head Start program, catastrophic illness coverage, to name just a couple. I also include the Women's Commission, which serves as a voice for the advancement of half our citizens. I am not fighting to spend more. I'm fighting to see what I believe are, or to set what I believe are important priorities. And obviously the question is, where will the money for these programs come from? There are major savings, in my opinion, to be made by eliminating duplicate and redundant functions in the administration. These kinds of savings will require reforms by the legislature, reforms that are long, by the governor, reforms that are long overdue. We should craft the budget to allow flexibility by the governor to achieve these savings, and I'd be happy to discuss those in some detail. Now that the House budget has been referred to the Finance Committee, public hearings that allow meaningful participation by Alaskans can and must be held. I'm sure that they will. The law requires it, but more importantly, it's the right thing to do. Thank you.
Senator Curtula?
I'd like to bring up my reconsideration of House Bill 559 at this time.
Without objection.
House Bill number 559, an act approving the sale of Kuparuk River Unit Royalty Oil by the State of Alaska to PetroStar Incorporated and Chevron USA Incorporated, and providing for an effective date in third reading on reconsideration.
Mr. President.
Senator Curtula.
I thought for a moment just to ask to hold it over again, but I think I can be brief, and this legislation can go on. Mr. President, yesterday, or the day before, I believe it was yesterday, that I just noted that the two factors involved in PetroStar, one of them was good news, and that is that we had set aside in escrow a substantial portion under contract. It's the only contract in the state that has that set aside. There is some voluntary compliance. The reason I mention it is that a number of the refiners may well not have the funds, unless they set them aside now, to pay if the state wins that case. And it's my opinion they'll be here trying to rectify their oversight out of state largesse. I want to mention it to you now, talk to you about it now, so that when it comes about, those that haven't set aside for this possibility don't come back to the state and take that which we won't have, funds from the general fund. Secondly, the thing that bothers me about it, about this particular contract and others, is the following, and it's a notation by the Commissioner of Natural Resources. The state must exercise caution in committing more of its oil to new or proposed projects so as it does not adversely impact future operations of the existing in-state refineries. There are also some other values to having a certain amount of surplus for contracting on shorter-term periods. It's my understanding that in the denomination approach, when the 35% value added has been afforded the state in contracts with Tesoro and apparently PetroStar, that there is a provision on notice that it can be reduced. Now, this reduction that Tesoro is seeking, and it had a 9-month notice, it's apparently been negotiated to a 6-month notice, has the opportunity of, between now and next May, of reducing state income. It's an opportunity loss of $1,019,000, just that reduction from 35 to 9 cents. Now, the problem is, the same opportunity, of course, is afforded in this contract to PetroStar. The problem is that the state cannot make long-term commitments of that oil because after denominating, they can come back in again and require the state to fulfill that contract. That leaves the state in a possible negative position, but it leaves the corporations doing business with the state an opportunity to have long-term commitments subject to very small penalty if they don't fulfill those commitments. And I think we're in some jeopardy to continue this approach. I just bring it up for your attention. I'm not opposed to this contract, but again, I mention it to you because there are substantial negatives. There is a downside to the state's economic future in this, as there are in other contracts I intend to mention in the not-too-distant future, in the next few days. And again, if in fact those companies that haven't voluntarily set aside for the Amerada Hess case
do not have the funds, it's on their head. It should not be on the backs of the people of this state.
Question.
Ready for the question. The question being, shall House Bill 559 pass the Senate on reconsideration? Senators may proceed to vote. Has any senator failed to vote? Secretary, lock the roll. Does any senator wish to change his or her vote? Secretary, record the vote.
The roll shows 16 yeas, 4 absent.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call and final passage of House Bill 559 on reconsideration be considered the roll call and effective date clause.
Without objection, the effective date clause is adopted, and so House Bill 559 is passed the Senate on reconsideration with the effective date clause. Brings it back to special orders. Any further special orders? Hearing none, Senator Halford.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate stand in adjournment until 10:30 a.m. tomorrow.
Without objection, the body is adjourned.